Chapter 10 Unseen Eyes. Salame was waiting when Egwene got back to her tent, a rail-thin woman with dark, Tyran coloring and a nearly impervious self-assurance. Chesa was right. She did carry her long nose raised, as though recoiling from a bad smell. Yet, if her manner with the other maids was arrogant, she was in reality quite different around her patroness. As Egwene entered, Salame folded herself into a curtsy so deep her head nearly brushed the carpet, skirts spread as wide as they would go in the cramped quarters. Before Egwene had taken her second step inside, the woman leaped up, fussing over her buttons. And fussing over her, too. Salame had very little sense. "Oh, mother, you went out with your head uncovered again!" As if she had ever worn any of those beaded caps the woman favored, or the embroidered velvet things Mary favored, or Chase's plumed hats. Why, you're shivering. You should never go walking out of doors without a shawl and parasol, mother. How is a parasol supposed to stop shivering? With sweat trickling down her own cheeks, however fast she dabbed with her handkerchief, Salame never thought to ask why she shivered, which was perhaps just as well. "And you went alone in the night. It just isn't proper, mother. Besides, there are all those soldiers, rough men, with no decent respect for any woman, even Aes Sedai. Mother, you simply mustn't." Egwene let the foolish words wash over her in the same way she let the woman undress her, paying less than half a mind. Ordering her to be quiet would only produce so many hurt looks and abused sighs that it made little difference. Except for the brainless chatter, Salame performed her duties diligently, if with so many flourishes they became a dance of grand gestures and obsequious curtsies. It seemed impossible that anyone could be as silly as Salame, always concerned with appearances, always worrying over what people would think. To her, people were Aes Sedai and the nobility, and their upper servants. By her book, no one else mattered. Perhaps no one else thought by her book. It probably was impossible. Egwene was not about to forget who had found Salame in the first place, any more than she did who had found Mary. True, Chesa was a gift from Shiriam, but Chesa had shown her loyalties to Egwene more than once. Egwene wanted to tell herself the tremors that the other woman took for shivers were quivers of rage, yet she knew a worm of fear writhed in her belly. She had come too far, had too much to do yet, to allow Nicola and Irena to put a spoke through her wheels. As her head popped through the top of a clean shift, she caught a bit of the skinny woman's prattle and stared. "Did you say ewe's milk?" "Oh, yes, mother. Your skin is so soft, and nothing will keep it that way like bathing in ewe's milk." Maybe she really was an idiot. Hustling a protesting Salame out, Egwene brushed her own hair, turned down her own cot, placed the now useless Idom bracelet in the small carved ivory box where she kept her few pieces of jewelry, then extinguished the lamps. "All by myself," she thought sarcastically in the darkness. "Salame and Mary will have conniptions." Before retiring, however, she padded to the entrance and opened a small gap in the door flaps. Outside was moonlit stillness and silence, broken by a night heron's cry that suddenly cut off in a shriek. There were hunters abroad in the darkness. After a moment, something moved in the shadows beside a tent across the way. It looked like a woman. Perhaps idiocy did not disqualify Salame any more than dour-faced gloom eliminated Mary. It could be either one, or someone else entirely. Even Nicola or Irena, however unlikely. She let the tent flap fall shut with a smile. Whoever the watcher was would not see where she went tonight. The way the wise ones had taught her to put herself to sleep was simple. Eyes closed, feeling each part of the body relax in turn, breathing in time with her heartbeat, mind unfocused and drifting, all but one tiny corner, drifting. Sleep swept over her in moments, but it was the sleep of a dreamwalker. Formless, she floated deep within an ocean of stars, infinite points of light glimmering in an infinite sea of darkness, fireflies beyond counting flickering in an endless night. Those were dreams, the dreams of everyone sleeping anywhere in the world, maybe of everyone in all possible worlds, and this was the gap between reality and Tel-Iran-Riod, the space separating the waking world from the world of dreams. Wherever she looked, 10,000 fireflies vanished as people woke, and 10,000 new were born to replace them. A vast, ever-changing array of sparkling beauty. She did not waste time in admiration, though. This place held dangers, some deadly. She was sure she knew how to avoid those, but one peril in this place aimed straight at her if she lingered too long, and being caught in it would be embarrassing, to say the least. Keeping a wary eye out, well, it would have been a wary eye had she had eyes here, she moved. She had no sense of motion. It seemed she stood still, and that glittering ocean swirled around her until one light settled before her. Every twinkling star looked exactly like every other, yet she knew this was Nynaeve's dream. How she knew was another matter. Not even the wise ones understood that recognition. She had considered trying to find Nicola's dreams and Irena's. Once she unearthed them, she knew exactly how to sink the fear of the light into their bones, and she did not give a fig that every bit of it was prescribed. Practicality sent her here instead, not fear of the forbidden. She had done what was not done before, and she was certain she would again should it become necessary. Do what you must, then pay the price for it, was what she had been taught by the same women who had marked off those forbidden areas. It was refusal to admit the debt, refusal to pay, that often turned necessity to evil. But even if that pair were asleep, locating someone's dreams the first time was arduous at best, without guarantees. Days of efforts, nights of it rather, were more likely to deliver nothing. This was at least sure. Slowly she moved closer through everlasting darkness, though once again it seemed that she stayed still and the pinpoint of light grew to a glowing pearl, an iridescent apple, a full moon, until it filled her vision entirely with brightness, all the world. She did not touch it, though, not yet. A space finer than a hair remained between. Ever so gently she reached across that gap. With what, lacking a body, was as much a mystery as how she knew one dream from another. Her will, the wise ones said, but she still did not understand how that could be. As though laying a finger to a soap bubble, she kept her touch very delicate indeed. The shining wall shimmered like spun glass, pulsed like a heart, delicate and alive. A little firmer touch and she would be able to see inside, see what Nynaeve was dreaming. A bit firmer still and she could actually step inside and be a part of the dream. That carried hazards, especially with anyone of a strong mind, but either looking in or stepping in could be mortifying. For example, if the dreamer happened to be dreaming of a man she was particularly interested in. Apologies alone took half the night when you did that. Or, with a hooking sort of motion, like rolling a fragile bead across a tabletop, she could snatch Nynaeve out into a dream of her own making, a part of Teleran Riod itself, where she was in complete control. She was sure that would work. Of course, that was one of the forbidden things, and she did not think Nynaeve would appreciate it. "Nynaeve, this is Egwene. Under no circumstances are you to return until you find the bowl, not until I can settle a problem with Irena and Nicola. They know you were pretending. I will explain more when I see you next in the little tower. Be careful, Mogedion has escaped." The dream winked out, the soap bubble pricked. Despite the message, she would have giggled had she possessed a throat. A disembodied voice in your dream could have a startling effect, especially if you were afraid the speaker might be peeking. Nynaeve was not one to forget, even when it was an accident. That light-spangled sea whirled about her once more until she settled on another sparkling pinpoint, Elaine. The two women very likely slept no more than a dozen paces apart in Ebu Dar, but distance had no meaning here, or perhaps it had a different meaning. This time, when she delivered her message, the dream pulsed and changed. It still appeared exactly the same as every other, but even so, to her, it was transformed. Had the words drawn Elaine into another dream? They would remain, however, and she would remember on waking. With Nicola and Irena's bowstrings dampened a little more, it was time to turn her attention to Rand. Unfortunately, finding his dreams would be as useless as finding an Aes Sedai's. He shielded his somewhat as they did theirs, although apparently a man's shield differed from a woman's. An Aes Sedai's shield was a crystal carapace, a seamless sphere woven of spirit, but however transparent it appeared, it might as well have been steel. She could not recall how many fruitless hours she had frittered away trying to peer through his. Where a sister's shielded dream seemed brighter close up, his were dimmer. It was like staring into muddy water. Sometimes you had the impression that something had moved deep in those gray-brown swirls, but you could never tell what. Again the endless array of lights spun and settled, and she approached a third woman's dream, gingerly. So much lay between her and Amis that it seemed akin to approaching her mother's dreams. In truth, she had to admit, she wanted to emulate Amis in many ways. She desired Amis's respect every bit as greatly as she did the hall's. Maybe, if she had to choose, she would choose Amis's. Certainly there was no sitter she esteemed as highly as she did Amis. Pushing away a sudden diffidence, she tried to make her voice softer, to no avail. "Amis, this is Egwene. I must speak with you."
"We will come," a voice murmured to her, Amis's voice.
Startled, Egwene backed away. She felt like laughing at herself. Perhaps it was just as well to be reminded that the wise ones had long years more experience at this. There were times she was afraid she might have been spoiled by not having to work harder for her abilities with the one power. Then again, as if to make up for it, sometimes everything else seemed like trying to climb a cliff in a rainstorm. Abruptly she caught movement at the very edge of her field of vision. One of those points of light slid through the sea of stars, drifting toward her of its own volition, growing larger. Only one dream would do that. One dreamer. In a panic she fled, wishing she had a throat to scream or curse or just shout, especially at the tiny corner of her that wanted to stay where she was and wait. Not even the stars moved this time. They simply disappeared, and she was leaning against a thick redstone column, panting as though she had sprinted a mile, heart beating fit to burst. After a moment she looked down at herself and began to laugh a trifle unsteadily, trying to catch her breath. She had on a full-skirted gown of shimmering green silk, worked in thread of gold in wide ornate bands across the bodice and along the hem. That bodice also showed considerably more bosom than she ever would waking, and a broad cinched belt of woven gold made her waist seem smaller than it really was. Then again, maybe it was smaller. Here in Telairun Riod you could be however you wanted, whatever you wanted. Even when the wanting was unconscious, if you were not careful. Gawain Trakand had unfortunate effects on her. Very unfortunate. That tiny part of her still wished she had waited to be overtaken by his dream. Overtaken and absorbed by it. If a dreamwalker loved somebody to distraction, or hated them beyond reason, most especially if the emotion was returned, she could be pulled into that person's dream. She drew the dream, or it drew her, as a lodestone drew iron filings. She certainly did not hate Gawain, but she could not afford to be trapped in his dream, not tonight. Trapped until he wakened, being as he saw her. Which was a good deal more beautiful than she truly was. Oddly, he appeared less beautiful than he was in life. There was no question of a strong mind or concentration when love or hate that strong was involved. Once you were in that dream, there you remained until the other person stopped dreaming about you. Remembering what he dreamed of doing with her, what they had done in his dreams, she felt a fiery blush suffusing her face. "A good thing none of the sitters can see me now," she muttered. "They'd never take me for anything but a girl then." Grown women did not flutter and moon over a man this way. She was certain of that. Not women with any sense, anyway. What he dreamed of would come, but at a time of her choosing. Obtaining her mother's permission might be difficult, yet surely she would not withhold it, even if she had never laid eyes on Gawain. Maren Alvir trusted her daughter's judgment. Now it was time for her youngest daughter to show a little of that judgment and put these fancies away until a better time. Looking around, she almost wished she could go on letting Gawain fill her thoughts. More massive columns ran in every direction, supporting a soaring, vaulted ceiling and a great dome. None of the gilded lamps hanging from golden chains overhead was lit, yet there was light of a sort, light that was just there, without source, neither bright nor dim. The heart of the stone, inside the great fortress called the Stone of Tyr, or rather its image in Telaran Riod, an image as real as the original in many ways. This was where she had met the wise ones before, their choice. A strange one for Aiel, it seemed to her. She would have expected Roydion, now that it was open, or somewhere else in the Aiel waste, or simply wherever the wise ones happened to be. Every place except Ogier Steading had its reflection in the world of dreams. Even the Steading did, really, but they could not be entered, just as Roydion had once been closed. The Aes Sedai camp was out of the question, of course. A number of the sisters now had access to Terangreal that allowed them to enter the world of dreams, and since none really knew what they were doing, they often began their ventures by appearing in the camp of Telaran Riod, as though setting out on a normal journey. Like Angreal and Saangreal, by Tower law, Terangreal were the property of the White Tower, no matter who happened to possess them for the present. Very seldom did the Tower insist, at least when possession lay somewhere like the so-called Great Holding in this very Stone of Tyr. Eventually they would come to the Aes Sedai, and the White Tower had always been good at waiting when it needed to. But those actually in Aes Sedai hands were in the gift of the Hall of individual sitters. The loan, really. They were almost never given. Elaine had learned to duplicate Dream Terangreal, and she and Nynaeve had taken two with them, but the rest were in the Hall's possession now, along with the other sorts Elaine had made. Which meant that Shiriam and her little circle could use them whenever they wished, and most assuredly Lelaine and Romanda, though it was likely those two sent others instead of entering Telaran Riod themselves. Until quite recently, no Aes Sedai had walked the dream in centuries, and they still had considerable difficulties, most of which stemmed from a belief that they could learn by themselves. Even so, the last thing Egwene wanted was any of their followers spying on this meeting tonight. As though the thought of spies had made her more sensitive, she became aware of being watched by unseen eyes. That sensation was always present in Telaran Riod, and not even the wise ones knew why. But although hidden eyes always seemed to be there, actual watchers might be present as well. It was not Romanda or Lelaine on her mind now. Trailing her hand against the column, she walked all the way around it slowly, studying the redstone forest as it ran away in deepening shadows. The light surrounding her was not real. Anybody in one of those shadows would see the same light around them while shadows hid her. People did appear, men and women, flickering images that rarely lasted more than a few heartbeats. She had no interest in those who touched the world of dreams in their sleep. Anyone might do that by happenstance, but luckily for them, only for moments, seldom long enough to face any of the dangers. The Black Aja possessed Dream Terangreal too, stolen from the tower. Worse, Mogedion knew Telaran Riod as well as any dreamwalker. Perhaps better. She could control this place and anyone in it as easily as turning her hand. For a moment, Egwene wished she had spied on Mogedion's dreams while the woman was prisoner, just once, just enough to be able to distinguish them. But even identifying her dreams would not reveal where she was now. And there had been the possibility of being drawn in against her will. She certainly despised Mogedion enough, and the Forsaken most assuredly hated her without bounds. What happened in there was not real, not even as real as in Telaran Riod, but you remembered it as if it was. A night in Mogedion's power would have been a nightmare she likely would have relived every time she went to sleep for the rest of her life. Maybe awake, too. Another circuit. What was that? A dark, regally beautiful woman in pearl-covered cap and lace-ruffed gown strode from the shadows and vanished. A Tyran woman dreaming, a high lady, or dreaming herself as one. She might be plain and dumpy, a farm wife or a merchant, awake. Better to have spied on Loghain than Mogedion. She still would not know where he was, but she might have some idea of his plans. Of course, being pulled into his dream might not have been much more pleasant than being drawn into Mogedion's. He hated all Aes Sedai, Arranging his escape had been one of those necessary things. She just hoped the price would not be too high. Forget Loghain. Mogedion was the danger. Mogedion, who might come after her, even here, especially here. Mogedion, who... Suddenly she became aware of how heavily she was moving, and made a vexed sound in her throat, very nearly a groan. The beautiful gown had become a full set of plate and mail armor like that of Gareth Bryn's heavy cavalry. An open-faced helmet rested on her head, with a crest in the shape of the flame of Tarvalin by the feel. It was very irritating. She was beyond this sort of lack of control. Firmly she changed the armor to what she had worn meeting the Wise Ones before. It was just a matter of thought. Full skirt of dark wool and loose white Algoda blouse, just as she had worn while studying with them, complete with a fringed shawl so green it was nearly black, and a folded headscarf to hold her hair back. She did not duplicate their jewelry, of course, all the multitudes of necklaces and bracelets. They would laugh at her for that. A woman built her collection over the years, not in the blink of a dream. "Loghain is on his way to the Black Tower," she said aloud. She certainly hoped he was. At least there would be some check on him then, or so she hoped. And if he was caught and gentled again, Rand could not blame any sister following her. "And Mogedion has no way of knowing where I am." That, she tried to make sound a certainty. "Why should you fear the shadow sold?" asked a voice behind her, and Egwene tried to climb into the air. This being Telairunriod, and she a dreamwalker, she was more than her own height above the floorstones before she came to herself. "Oh, yes," she thought, floating. "I'm far beyond all those beginner's mistakes." If this went on, next she would be jumping when Chesa gave her good morning. Hoping she was not blushing too badly, she let herself settle slowly. Perhaps she could retain a little dignity. Perhaps. Yet Bear's aged face had more creases than usual from a grin that seemed nearly to touch her ears. Unlike the other two women with her, she could not channel, but that had nothing to do with dreamwalking. She was as skilled as either, more in some areas. Amice was smiling, too, if not so broadly, but sun-haired Milane threw back her head and roared. "I have never seen anyone," Milane just managed to get out. "Like a rabbit!" She gave a little hop and lifted a full pace into the air. "I recently caused Mogedion some hurt." Egwene was quite proud of her poise. She liked Milane. The woman was much less thorny since she was with child. With twins, actually. But at the moment Egwene could have strangled her cheerfully. "Some friends and I damaged her pride, if not much more. I think she would like the opportunity to repay me." On impulse she changed her clothes once more, to the sort of riding dress she wore every day now, in lustrous green silk. The great serpent encircled her finger with gold. She could not tell them everything, but these women were friends too, and they deserved to know what she could tell. "Wounds to the pride are remembered long after wounds to the flesh." Bear's voice was thin and high, yet strong, a reed of iron. "Tell us about it," Milane said, with an eager smile. "How did you shame her?" Bear's was just as enthusiastic. In a cruel land you either learn to laugh at cruelty or spend your life weeping. In the threefold land the Aiel had learned to laugh long since. Besides, shaming an enemy was considered an art. Amice studied Egwene's new clothes for a moment, then said, "That can come later, I think. We are to talk, you said." She gestured to where the wise ones liked to talk, out beneath the vast dome at the heart of the chamber. Why they chose that spot was another mystery Egwene could not puzzle out. The three women settled themselves cross-legged, spreading their skirts neatly, only a few paces from what seemed to be a sword made of gleaming crystal, rising hilt first from where it had been driven into the floorstones. They paid it no mind whatsoever. It was no part of their prophecies, any more than they did the people who flashed into existence around the great chamber, but here was always where they came. Fabled Kalandor would indeed function as a sword despite its appearance, but in truth it was a male Sa'angreal, one of the most powerful ever made in the Age of Legends. She felt a little shiver, thinking of male Sa'angreal. It had been different when there was only Rand, and the Forsaken, of course. But now there were these Ashaman. With Kalandor, a man could draw enough of the One Power to level a city in a heartbeat and devastate everything for miles. She walked wide around it, holding her skirts aside reflexively. From the heart of the stone, Rand had drawn Kalandor in fulfillment of the prophecies, then returned it for his own reasons. Returned it and snared it round with traps woven in Sidene. They would have their reflection, too, one that might trigger as decisively as the original, should the wrong weaves be tried nearby. Some things in Tel-Iran-Riod were all too real. Trying not to think of the sword that is not a sword, Egwene placed herself before the three wise ones. Fastening their shawls around their waists, they unlaced their blouses. That was how Aiel women sat with friends, in their tents beneath a hot sun. She did not sit, and if that made her seem a supplicant or on trial, so be it. In a way, in her heart, she was. "I've not told you why I was summoned away from you, and you have not asked." "You will tell us when you are ready," Amice said complacently. She looked of an age with Milane, despite hair white as bear's tumbling to her waist. Her hair had begun turning when she was little older than Egwene, but she was the leader among the three, not bear. For the first time Egwene wondered just how old she was. Not a question you asked a wise one, any more than an Aes Sedai. "When I left you, I was one of the accepted. You know about the division in the White Tower." Bear shook her head and grimaced. She knew, but she did not understand. None of them did. To Aiel, it was as unreal as clan or warrior society dividing against itself. Perhaps it was also affirmation in their eyes that Aes Sedai were less than they should be. Egwene went on, surprised that her voice was collected, steady. "The sisters who oppose Elida have raised me as their Ammerlin. When Elida is pulled down, I will sit on the Ammerlin seat in the White Tower." She added the striped stole to her clothes and waited. Once she had lied to them, a serious transgression under Ji'i To, and she was not sure how they would react to learning this truth she had hidden. If only they believed, at least. They merely looked at her. "There is a thing children do," Milane said carefully after a time. Her pregnancy did not show yet, but already she had the inner radiance, making her even more beautiful than usual, and an inward unshakable calm. "Children all want to push spears, and they all want to be the clan chief, but eventually they realize that the clan chief seldom dances the spears himself, so they make a figure and set it on a rise." Off to one side, the floor suddenly mounded up, no longer stone tiles, but a ridge of sun-baked brown rock. Atop it stood a shape vaguely like a man, made of twisted twigs and bits of cloth. "This is the clan chief who commands them to dance the spears from the hill where he can see the battle. But the children run where they will, and their clan chief is only a figure of sticks and rags." A wind whipped the cloth strips, emphasizing the hollowness of the shape, and then ridge and figure were gone. Egwene drew a deep breath. Of course. She had atoned for her lie, according to Ji'i To, by her own choice, and that meant it was as if the lie had never been spoken. She should have known better. But they had struck to the heart of her situation, as though they had been weeks in the Aes Sedai camp. Bear studied the floor, not wanting to witness her shame. Amis sat with chin in hand, sharp blue gaze trying to dig to her heart. "Some see me so." Another deep breath, and she pushed the truth out. "All but a handful do. Now. By the time we finish our battle, they will know I am their chief, and they will run as I say." "Return to us," Bear said. "You have too much honor for these women. Sorilia already has a dozen young men picked out for you to view in the sweat tents. She has a great desire to see you make a bridal wreath." "I hope she will be there when I wed, Bear." To Gawain, she hoped. That she would bond him, she knew from interpreting her dreams, but only hope and the certainty of love said they would wed. "I hope all of you will, but I've made my choice." Bear would have argued further, and Milane too, but Amis raised a hand and they fell silent, if not pleased. There is much ji in her decision. She will bend her enemies to her will, not run from them. I wish you well in your dance, Egwene Alvear. She had been a maiden of the spear, and often thought as one still. Sit, sit. Her honor is her own, Bear said, frowning at Amis. But I have another question. Her eyes were an almost watery blue, yet when they turned on Egwene, they were sharp as ever Amis's had been. Will you bring these Aes Sedai to kneel to the Karakarn? Startled, Egwene nearly fell the last foot to the floorstones, rather than sitting. There was no hesitation in her answer, though. I can't do that, Bear, and would not if I could. Our loyalty is to the tower, to the Aes Sedai as a whole, above even the lands we were born in. That was true, or was supposed to be, though she wondered how the claim squared in their minds with her and the others' rebellion. Aes Sedai don't even swear fealty to the Amyrlin, and certainly not to any man. That would be like one of you kneeling to a clan chief. She made an illustration the way Melaine had, by concentrating on its reality. Tel Iron Riod was infinitely malleable if you knew how. Beyond Kalendor, three wise ones dropped to their knees before a clan chief. The man strongly resembled Ruark, the women the three in front of her. She only held it for an instant, but Bear glanced at it and sniffed loudly. The notion was preposterous. "Do not compare those women to us." Melaine's green eyes sparkled with something very like their old sharpness. Her tone was honed like a razor. Egwene held her tongue. The wise ones seemed to despise Aes Sedai, all except her, or perhaps better to say they were contemptuous. She thought they might actually resent the prophecies that linked them to Aes Sedai. Before she had been summoned by the hall to be raised Amyrlin, Shiriam and her circle of friends had met here regularly with these three. But that had ended as much because the wise ones refused to hide their contempt as because Egwene finally had been called. In Tel Iron Riod, a confrontation with someone more familiar with the place could be mortifying in the extreme. Even with Egwene, there was a distance now, and certain matters they would not discuss, such as whatever they knew of Rand's plans. Before, she had been one with them, a student in dreamwalking. After, she was Aes Sedai, even before they learned what she had just told them. "Egwene Alvear will do as she must," Amis said. Melaine gave her a long look and rearranged her shawl ostentatiously, shifted several long necklaces in a clatter of ivory and gold, but said nothing. Amis seemed even more the leader than she had been. The only wise one Egwene had ever seen make other wise ones defer to her so easily was Cerulea. Bear had imagined tea before her as it might be in the tents, a golden teapot worked with lions from one country, a silver tray edged in ropework from another, tiny green cups of delicate seafolk porcelain. The tea tasted real, of course, felt real, going down. Despite a hint of some sweet berry or herb she did not recognize, it was too bitter for Egwene's tongue. She imagined a little honey in it and took another sip. Too sweet. A touch less honey. Now it tasted right. That was something you could not do with the power. Egwene doubted that anyone had the skill to weave threads of Saidar fine enough to remove honey from tea. For a moment she sat peering into her teacup, thinking about honey and tea and fine threads of Saidar, but that was not what held her silent. The wise ones wanted to guide Rand no less than Elida or Romanda or Lelaine, or very likely any other Aes Sedai. Of course, they only wanted to direct the Karakarn in a way that was best for the Aiel, yet those sisters wanted to direct the Dragon Reborn toward what was best for the world, as they saw it. She did not spare herself. Helping Rand, keeping him from putting himself at odds with Aes Sedai beyond recovery, those meant guiding him too. Only I'm right, she reminded herself. Whatever I do is as much for his own good as for anybody else's. None of the others ever think about what's right for him. But it was best to remember that these women were more than simply her friends and followers of the Karakarn. No one was ever simply anything, she was learning. I do not think you wished only to tell us you are now a woman chief among the wetlanders, Amis said over her teacup. What troubles your mind, Egwene Alvear? What troubles me is what always does. She smiled to lighten the mood. Sometimes I think Rand is going to give me gray hairs before my time. Without men, no woman would have gray hairs. Normally that would have been a joke on Melaine's tongue, and Bear would have made another over the vast knowledge of men Melaine had gained in just a few months of marriage, but not this time. All three women simply watched Egwene and waited. So, they wished to be serious. Well, Rand was serious business. She just wished she could be sure they saw it anything at all the way she did. Balancing her cup on her fingertips, she told them everything. About Rand, anyway, and her fears since learning of the silence from Camelin. I don't know what he's done, or what she has. Everybody tells me how experienced Myrana is, but she's had none with the likes of him. When it comes to Aes Sedai, if you hid this cup in a meadow, he'd still manage to step on it inside 3 paces. I know I could do better than Myrana, but... You could return, Bear suggested again, and Egwene shook her head firmly. I can do more where I am, as Ammerlin. And there are rules even for the Ammerlin seat. Her mouth twisted for an instant. She did not like admitting that, especially not to these women. I can't even visit him without the Hall's permission. I'm Aes Sedai now, and I have to obey our laws. That came out more fiercely than she intended. It was a stupid law, but she had not yet found a way around it. Besides, they wore so little expression, she was sure they were snickering incredulously inside. Not even a clan chief had the right to say when or where a wise one could go. The three women across from her exchanged long looks. Then Amis set her teacup down and said, Myrana Ambre and other Aes Sedai followed the Karakarn to the Tree Killer's city. You need have no fear he will put his foot wrong with her, or any of your sisters with her. We will see that there is no difficulty between him and any Aes Sedai. That hardly sounds like Rand, Egwene said doubtfully. So Shiriam had been right about Myrana, but why was she still silent? Bear cackled with laughter. Most parents have more trouble with their children than lies between the Karakarn and the women who came with Myrana Ambre. So long as he isn't the child, Egwene chuckled, relieved that someone was amused at something. The way these women felt about Aes Sedai, they would have been spitting nails if they thought any sister was gaining influence with him. On the other hand, Myrana had to gain some, or she might as well leave now. But Myrana should have sent a report. I don't understand why she hasn't. You're certain there isn't any... She could not think of how to finish. There was no way that Rand could have stopped Myrana from sending off a pigeon. Perhaps she sent a man on a horse, Amis grimaced faintly, as much as any Aiel she found riding repugnant. Your own legs were good enough. She brought none of the birds that wetlanders use. That was foolish of her, Egwene muttered. Foolish did not come close. Myrana's dreams would be shielded, so there was no point trying to talk to her there. Even if they could be found. Light, but it was vexing. She leaned forward intently. Amis, promise me you won't try to stop him from talking with her, or make her so angry she does something foolish. They were quite capable of that. More than capable. They had putting an Aes Sedai's back up perfected to a talent. She's just supposed to convince him that we mean him no harm. I'm sure Elida has some nasty surprise hidden behind her skirts, but we don't. She would see to that if anyone had different notions. Somehow she would. Promise me? They passed unreadable looks back and forth. They could not like the idea of letting a sister near Rand, certainly not unhindered. Doubtless one of them would contrive to be present whenever Myrana was, but she could live with that so long as they did not hinder too much. I promise, Egwene Alvear, Amis said finally, in a voice flat as worked stone. Probably she was offended that Egwene had required a pledge, but Egwene felt as though a weight had lifted. 2 weights. Rand and Myrana were not at each other's throats, and Myrana would have a chance to do what she'd been sent to do. I knew I'd have the unvarnished truth from you, Amis, I can't tell you how glad I am to hear it. If anything were wrong between Rand and Mirana, thank you. Startled, she blinked. For an instant, Amice wore cut-insore. She made some sort of small gesture, too. Maiden hand talk, perhaps. Neither Bear nor Melaine, sipping their tea, gave any sign that they had noticed. Amice must have been wishing she were somewhere else, away from the tangle Rand had made of everybody's life. It would be embarrassing, shaming, for a wise one dreamwalker to lose control of herself in Tel Iron Riod even for an instant. To the Aiel, shame hurt far worse than pain, but it had to be witnessed to be shame. If it was not seen, or those who saw refused to admit it, then it might as well never have happened. A strange people, but she certainly did not want to shame Amice. Composing her face, she went on as if nothing had happened. "I must ask a favor. An important favor. Don't tell Rand or anybody about me. About this, I mean to say." She lifted an end of her stole. Their faces made an Aes Sedai's best calm look maniacal. Stone was not in it. "I don't mean lie," she added hastily. Under Jito, asking someone to lie was little better than telling one yourself. "Just don't bring it up. He's already sent somebody to rescue me. And won't he be furious when he finds out I shuffled Matt off to Ebu Dar with Nynaeve and Elaine," she thought. She'd had to do it, though. "I don't need rescuing, and I don't want it, but he thinks he knows better than everybody. I'm afraid he might come hunting for me himself." Which frightened her more? That he might appear in the camp alone, raging, with 300 or so Aes Sedai around him? Or that he might come with some of the Ashaman? Either way, a disaster. "That would be unfortunate," Melaine murmured, though she was seldom one for understatement. And Bear muttered, "The Karakarn is headstrong, as bad as any man I have ever known, and a few women, for that matter." "We will hold your confidence close, Egwene Alvear," Amice said gravely. Egwene blinked at the quick agreement, but perhaps it was not so surprising. To them, the Karakarn was only another chief, just more so, and wise ones had certainly been known to keep things from a chief they thought he should not know. After that, there was not much to say, though they talked a while longer over more cups of tea. She longed for a lesson in walking the dream, but could not ask with Amice there. Amice would go, and she wanted her company more than learning. The closest the wise ones came to telling her anything Rand was actually doing was when Melaine grumbled that he should finish the Shido and Savannah now, and both Bear and Amice frowned at her so she turned bright red. After all, Savannah was a wise one, as Egwene knew quite bitterly. Not even the Karakarn would be allowed to interfere with even a Shido wise one, and she could not give them details of her own circumstances. That they had leaped right to the most shaming part did nothing to lessen the shame she would feel talking about it. It was very hard not to drop back into behaving, even thinking as the Aiel did, when she was around them. For that matter, she thought it might have shamed her had she never met an Aiel, and the only sort of advice they had about dealing with Aes Sedai lately was of a nature that Elida herself would not try to follow. An Aes Sedai riot, unlikely as it sounded, might result. Worse, they already thought badly enough of Aes Sedai without her adding wood to the fire. Some day she wanted to forge a link between the Wise Ones and the White Tower, but that would never happen unless she managed to dampen that fire down. Another thing she had no idea how to do as yet. "I must go," she said at last, standing. Her body lay asleep in her tent, but there was never quite enough rest in sleep while you were in Tel Iron Riod. The others rose with her. "I hope you will all be very careful. Mogedion hates me, and she would certainly try to hurt anyone who's my friend. She knows a great deal about the world of dreams, at least as much as Lanfear did." That was as close as she could come to warning them without saying right out that Mogedion might know more than they. Aiel pride could be prickly. They took her meaning, though, and without offense. "If the Shadow Souled meant to threaten us," Melaine said, "I think they would have by now. Perhaps they believe we are no threat to them." "We have glimpsed those who must be dreamwalkers, including men." Bear shook her head incredulously. No matter what she knew about the Forsaken, she considered male dreamwalkers about as common as legs on snakes. They avoid us, all of them. I think we are as strong as they, Amice added. In the One Power, she and Melaine were no stronger than Theodrin and Faelaine, far from weak, indeed stronger than most Aes Sedai, but far from a Forsaken strength, too. Yet in the world of dreams, knowledge of Telairun Riod was often as powerful as Saidar, more at times. Here, Bear was the equal of any sister. But we will take care. It is the enemy you underestimate who kills you. Egwene took Amice's hand, and Melaine's, and would have Bear's had there been a way. Instead, she included her with a smile. I'll never be able to tell you what your friendship means to me, what you mean to me. Despite everything, that was simple truth. The whole world seems to be changing every time I blink. You three are one of the few firm spots in it. The world does change, Amice said sadly. Even mountains are worn away by the wind, and no one can climb the same hill twice. I hope we will always be friends in your eyes, Egwene Alvear. May you always find water and shade. And with that they were gone, back to their own bodies. For a time she stood frowning at Kalandor, but not seeing it, until suddenly she gave herself an exasperated shake. She had been thinking about that endless field of stars. If she waited there long, Gawain's dream would find her again, swallow her the way his arms would shortly thereafter. A pleasant way to spend the rest of the night, and a childish waste of time. Firmly she made herself step back to her sleeping body, but not to ordinary sleep. She never did that anymore. That one corner of her brain remained fully aware, cataloguing her dreams, filing away those that foretold the future, or at any rate gave glimpses of the possible course it might take. At least she could tell that much now, though the only one she'd been able to interpret so far was the dream that told of Gawain becoming her warder. Aes Sedai called this dreaming, and the women who could do it, dreamers, all long dead but her, yet it had no more to do with the One Power than dreamwalking did. Perhaps it was inevitable she should dream first of Gawain because she had been thinking of him. She stood in a vast, dim chamber where everything was indistinct. Everything except Gawain slowly coming toward her. A tall, beautiful man. Had she ever thought his half-brother Galad was more beautiful? With golden hair and eyes of the most wonderful deep blue. He had some distance to cover yet, but he could see her. His gaze was fixed on her like an archer's on the target. A faint sound of crunching and grating hung in the air. She looked down, and felt a scream building in her. On bare feet, Gawain walked across a floor of broken glass, shards breaking at every slow step. Even in that faint light she could see the trail of blood left by his slashed feet. She flung out a hand, tried to shout for him to stop, tried to run to him. But just that quickly she was elsewhere. In the way of dreams, she floated above a long, straight road across a grassy plain, looking down upon a man riding a black stallion. Gawain. Then she was standing in the road in front of him, and he reined in. Not because he saw her this time, but the road that had been straight now forked, right where she stood, running over tall hills so no one could see what lay beyond. She knew, though. Down one fork was his violent death, down the other a long life and a death in bed. On one path he would marry her, on the other not. She knew what lay ahead, but not which way led to which. Suddenly he did see her, or seemed to, and smiled, and turned his horse along one of the forks. And she was in another dream, and another, and again. Not all had any bearing on the future. Dreams of kissing Gawain, of running in a cool spring meadow with her sisters the way they had as children, slid by along with nightmares, where Aes Sedai with switches chased her through endless corridors, where misshapen things lurched through shadows all around, where a grinning Nicola denounced her to the hall and Tom Marilyn came forward to give evidence. Those she discarded, the others she tucked away, to be prodded and poked later in the hope she might understand what they meant. She stood before an immense wall, clawing at it, trying to tear it down with her bare hands. It was not made of brick or stone, but countless thousands of discs, each half white and half black, the ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai, like the seven seals that had once held the Dark One's prison shut. Some of those seals were broken now, though not even the One Power could break Quendiyar, and the rest had weakened somehow, but the wall stood strong however she beat at it. She could not tear it down. Maybe it was the symbol that was important. Maybe it was the Aes Sedai she was trying to tear down, the White Tower. Maybe... Matt sat on a night-shrouded hilltop, watching a grand illuminator's display of fireworks, and suddenly his hand shot up, seized one of those bursting lights in the sky. Arrows of fire flashed from his clenched fist, and a sense of dread filled her. Men would die because of this. The world would change. But the world was changing. It always changed. Straps at waist and shoulder held her tightly to the block, and the headsman's axe descended, but she knew that somewhere someone was running, and if they ran fast enough, the axe would stop. If not... In that corner of her mind, she felt a chill. Loghain, laughing, stepped across something on the ground and mounted a black stone. When she looked down, she thought it was Rand's body he had stepped over, laid out on a funeral bier with his hands crossed at his breast. But when she touched his face, it broke apart like a paper puppet. A golden hawk stretched out its wing and touched her, and she and the hawk were tied together somehow. All she knew was that the hawk was female. A man lay dying in a narrow bed, and it was important he not die. Yet outside a funeral pyre was being built, and voices raised songs of joy and sadness. A dark young man held an object in his hand that shone so brightly she could not see what it was. On and on they came, and she sorted feverishly, desperately tried to understand. There was no rest in it, but it must be done. She would do what must be done.